An update on the status of Maine marijuana regulation. Maine's next-door neighbor, Canada, legalized cannabis yesterday. It had 4 months to get ready. Canada's House of Commons and Senate approved legalization in June, then scheduled the law to go into effect October 17th, and yesterday it happened. Meantime, Maine still has not fully implemented cannabis legalization, even though it's been nearly 2 years since voters approved a referendum to do so. What's going on, and how close are state regulators to implementing regulations and guidelines for sellers? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will get an update on Maine's situation. We'll learn about Canada's new law, and we'll hear from the Canadian Consul General about what this means at the border. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As of yesterday, cannabis is legal in Canada. Today, we'll learn what that means for Maine, especially since we share a border. We will also find out where things stand in terms of marijuana regulation here in our state. Joining me in the studio, Representative Teresa Peirce and Senator Roger Cates. They are co-chairs of the Maine Legislative Committee on Marijuana Legalization and Implementation. And Hillary Lister, she is an industry consultant and patient advocate for medical marijuana. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how marijuana rules are going to be implemented in Maine? Are you wondering what Canada's new law does or doesn't allow? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, brief please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. Representative Peirce, I'll start with you. We know that marijuana was legalized in Maine by voter referendum in 2016, but everything since then has been very confusing. As I noted at the beginning of the program, Canada passed this law 4 months ago, and now it's in effect. Walk us through a little bit of what's happened over the past year or two in Maine.
Thank you. I'd be happy to. It's delightful to be here. I think we were here before when we were in this process, and now that process is somewhat completed and we're moving forward. So after it was passed by referendum, narrowly by the state of Maine and the people of Maine, the legislature saw fit to put together a committee to address the many issues and maybe contradictions that were in within the referendum and things we needed to tweak or move forward on or change or keep the same. So a 17-member committee was pulled together with Senator Cates and myself, a great committee. We did a lot of due diligence. We talked to a lot of different states. We went to Colorado on a visit. We tried to keep as much of the referendum in place as possible, but we also learned a lot from other places. So I think what we pulled together was a bill and a piece of legislation that represents a comprehensive look at the marijuana industry. It deals with taxation and types of licensing, safety issues, impairment issues. It deals with packaging and labeling and things that will protect children. And we were able to pass that. It was vetoed by the governor, and then we were able to override that veto.
So that bill has been passed. I'm going to turn to you now, Senator Cates. What does that mean? What's the timeline now that the bill has been enacted?
Well, if people are impatient, I can understand why. The timeline in Maine has been a little bit dragged out. Some of it was on purpose because we wanted to make sure we were getting it right. But as Teresa just said, the governor vetoed the first effort. We sustained that veto in the legislature, had to go back and start all over again. So that's taken us some extra time. Now that the bill has passed, and we have like a 98-page bill, you'd think that would be the end of it, but that's really just the beginning because now the administration has to write rules on how this is actually going to work on the ground in practice. There'll probably be hundreds of pages of rules, and that's a lengthy process. So the administration decided to put out an RFP for a consultant to assist it in drafting those rules. The deadline for those RFPs is November 1st.
Soon.
It's soon. They're hoping to pick the consultant by December 1st, hoping to start the work January 1st, and hopefully the rulemaking, if all goes well, will be done by the middle of April so the next legislature can put their stamp of approval on these rules. And then if everything works well, Actual sales might start to happen maybe the end of 2019. So it's been a long timeline.
And so once those rules are in place, it still needs to go through the legislature again.
Just the full legislature? The legislature has to approve these substantive rules.
Okay. Hillary, I want to bring you into the conversation. What about medical marijuana? That's been on a different timetable, but was also going through various stages of regulation. Where do things stand now?
So there's a lot of pretty major changes to the state's medical marijuana laws going into effect over the next few months. Maine passed its medical marijuana referendum originally back in 1999. It amended it and expanded it so it became more of a commercial operation in 2010, and patient access was expanded. And then this year in the legislature, two major bills, one of which is over 70 pages long, were passed to, again, sort of expand the scale of what could be allowed for medical cannabis access. Also puts into effect a lot of new rules around testing, labeling, and also gives the towns a lot more authority to regulate medical cannabis operations. And also, like the adult use law, it directs the department to write rules to implement the details of all of this. So even though the new laws are going into effect mid-December, it'll probably be at least another 6 months before a lot of the details go in effect and some of the more expanded business operations can start happening.
Joining us on the line now is David Allward. He is Canada's Consul General to New England. Thank you for calling in, David.
Oh, pleased to be on the line.
So it was big headlines yesterday that Canada's new law went into effect. How does the legalization of cannabis change the rules at the Canada-U.S. border?
Great question. And actually, one of the things we're trying to do is reach out to everybody on both sides of the border right now, because the reality is there is no change to the rules on the Canada-U.S. border when it comes to cannabis. So it means that taking cannabis across the border was before yesterday and still is today illegal, whether you're leaving or entering Canada. So it's really important for people to realize that on both sides of the border, that please do not take cannabis across the border because it is illegal.
What will the penalties be if someone brings cannabis into or out of Canada from Maine?
Well, that obviously I'm not in position to talk about, you know, specific penalties, because each one would depend on the specific situation, but it can certainly lead to years in prison depending on the infraction. So it is important that people realize that while it is now legal in Canada, it's legal or decriminalized in a number of states. Going across the border, things haven't changed either way. So it's important to know, or for people to know, that they can't take cannabis across the border. The other piece, and I know you had just started talking about medical marijuana, it's the same thing for medical marijuana as well. Even if someone has a prescription at home, they're not able to take medical cannabis across the border either.
That was my next question. I'm going to go to an email now, because I know we only have you on the phone for a couple minutes. This is from Maura. She says, a friend of mine buys very expensive CBD oil here in Maine to manage his chronic pain condition. Would he be able to buy it cheaper in Canada, and would that be legal? Is the answer no, even for an oil?
Again, anything that contains cannabis, any product that contains cannabis will remain illegal to cross the border.
And finally, David, is it true that border agents may now ask people if they have ever used cannabis? Is that a question that can legally be asked and acted upon at the border?
Really, that's a question that you need to be speaking with agents with U.S. Customs Border Services. Certainly, they have a job to do, and people need to be prepared to answer their questions.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to call us. That's David Allward, Canada's Consul General to New England. He's based in Boston. Thank you. So interesting that this is all happening at the same time. So let's talk about, you know, somebody asked about CBD oil. He talks about anything containing cannabis. Let's look at some of the distinctions. We've heard about THC, CBD. Hillary, explain how those differ and why places like Maine have allowed for certain levels of each.
Sure. So THC and CBD are both compounds of the cannabis plant that occur in differing amounts in different varieties of cannabis. Traditionally, for up until relatively recently, people were growing plants to maximize the amount of THC. It's the compound that generally is going to make you tired, have psychoactive effects, also have pain-killing effects. There's been a lot of research in the past decade into CBD, cannabidiol, which is currently being derived from industrial hemp plants. And under the Farm Bill of 2014, states were authorized to enact their own regulations around cultivation of industrial hemp. A lot of it was intended initially for potentially biomass or fiber, but in Maine, as in most states, most of the production has gone towards CBD production. It's been a real gray area in terms of whether CBD is considered a product of a controlled substance, marijuana, or if it's unregulated or just regulated like hemp. The DEA has said it's still considered marijuana controlled substance. FDA did recently reschedule Epidiolex, which is the first medication that is made from the cannabis plant with CBD, but they didn't actually reschedule hemp or CBD. And CBD has been used especially for treatment of seizure disorders. There's been a lot of progress for treatment of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease. So it's something that a lot of people are seeking out now. There's a lot of products on the market. The quality varies pretty dramatically because it's coming everything from Chinese industrial hemp to now there is industrial hemp on a pretty large scale being produced in Maine, though there's still a lack of processing facilities, but it's a market that a lot of people are looking to get into. And there's still a lot of lack of clarity on the federal level of really what is or isn't allowed.
Yeah, can I jump in on that?
Yeah.
Hillary mentioned the federal government, and that's really the elephant in the room here. Because under federal law, cannabis is still, or marijuana is still a Schedule I drug. It's like the most serious classification of drug. And so it is technically against federal law to possess marijuana in the state of Maine, even though we have now legalized it here in Maine. So we always have our head looking over our shoulders here at what the federal government might or might not do. And when you're thinking about regulating an industry like we are with this new marijuana industry in the state of Maine, and you want to be able to control it and tax it effectively and just keep some controls in place, the last thing you want to do is have it be a cash business, because that makes it almost impossible to really regulate well. And that's what we have for the most part in the state of Maine.
Sure, because banks can't.
Banks can't or won't take deposits and deal with people who are in the cannabis industry because they're afraid of their charters and what might happen to them as a result, and they should be. So until we get some sort of change in the federal outlook on marijuana, we're going to have kind of one hand tied behind our back, so to speak, in trying to effectively regulate it.
So Maine is marching forward, knowing full well that something could happen in Washington that just changes everything almost instantly.
Well, certainly on the recreational side, where I think perhaps 9 states now have passed some form of legalization, that's true. But on the medical side, I think that Teresa and Hillary would probably agree, well over half the people in the country now are in states which allow medical marijuana in one form or another. It's hard to see politically how the federal government would really change course and say, no, you can't even do that. They can still give us a hard time on banking regulations and credit cards and all the rest, but it's hard to see them coming down hard on medical marijuana.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that, like many things, sometimes states are incubators for change, and I think we're seeing this with the adult use cannabis industry and medical, for that matter. It really came about in the states and has been advanced that way. So at some level, the federal government is a little bit playing catch up with what the rest of the states are doing. I think North Dakota, Michigan, they're both have referendums on legalization of adult use coming up. Missouri's doing a medical referendum as well. So I think states that have it legalized, even with the federal government saying that it is a Schedule I drug, seem to be making it work in their states at some level, especially when they do it in a comprehensive and thoughtful way. I'm
reminded of this by Roger's comment about it being a cash business primarily and how hard that is to tax and regulate. In states that pass these recreational marijuana laws before Maine has, does there continue to be a black market in which the price is lower and there are not taxes being collected? And what has Maine learned from these other states, such as California and Colorado?
I think what they learned from Colorado a little bit is that a ancillary whole industry came about in terms of security and transferring of funds, and specifically cash, to pay those things out of. And so that whole industry jumped up. And then in addition, the state of Colorado had to invest actually just in cash counting machines just to take in that tax revenue. I think if you create a system that can work for people, people want to obey by the rules that you've created and do it. Does that mean there's not a black market? There, of course, is always a black market. But the quicker you regulate, the quicker you give people the opportunity to buy it legally and get it up and running, the more you can dissipate the black market, which is why we're trying so valiantly, I guess would be the right word for that, just to get this up and going and running so that people aren't participating in the black market.
Yeah, and the taxation question is a really important one that we struggle a lot with. We'd like to maximize the tax revenue to the state of Maine, obviously, but you get too high and now you start pricing your product higher than the black market and people won't buy legal. They'll go back to the black market. So it's a very interesting dance trying to find exactly that right price. And even then, it's more art than science, I think, because there's so little good data on what the black market really is.
So what have we settled upon? When in 2019 this goes into place, how will it be taxed?
I'll ask our tax expert here, Representative Hurst.
So our referendum taxed it just at a sales point of sale at 10%. And what we found that across the United States, that wasn't really commensurate with what was going on. Colorado has an effective rate of 39%. So we raised it with creating an excise tax and a sales tax. We still have a 10% point of purchase sales tax, but we also have an excise tax. So once the product goes from being an agricultural product into another type of product, we tax it at an effective rate of 10%. And we worked directly with Maine Revenue Services to try to develop that. They looked at all the different taxes over the states, and we tried to get an effective rate that would do that.
So when a grower, for example, sells it to a social club, that's when an excise tax comes in?
No one can sell it to a social club because we do not have social clubs in this bill. I think that was a bone of contention with a lot of people that was part of the referendum. We spoke long and hard with other states who've been trying to have social clubs up and running, and no one's been able to successfully do it yet. And we didn't think that it was imperative to having a market up and going to having social clubs. So the committee voted to not include social clubs in this bill, and they are not legal at this current moment.
All right. Well, we are talking about the implementation of Maine's medical marijuana law. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from a Canadian journalist, and we'll have more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And McVetti's Hearth and Home, installation and maintenance of gas, wood, and pellet stoves, showroom in Yarmouth. More at stovesofmaine.com.
I'm Marco Werman. The World's Newsroom brings you the big picture stories and some other stuff.
The reason why you slurp is not just to make a loud sound.
There's a lot of very slimy foods in lots of cultures that don't work exactly in the grammar of American food.
And I guess frog fallopian tubes are slimy.
They're not exactly slimy. They're sort of gelatinous.
Join us and hear the world.
Coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Are you interested in traveling to Sicily? Maine Public Travel is headed to Sicily next May on another of our cultural explorations to this fascinating island. You're invited to join Morning Edition host Erwin Grass and other friends of Maine Public. Our Many Flavors of Sicily 10-day tour will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and music that will offer insight and understanding of Sicily and its people. Learn more about Maine Public's Sicily tour by visiting our website, mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what's happening with marijuana regulation? Joining me in the studio, Hillary Lister, who's a consultant and patient advocate for medical marijuana, State Representative Teresa Peirce, and State Senator Roger Cates. They are co-chairs of Maine's Legislative Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation. We invite you to join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Patrick Butler. He is a senior writer with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Thank you for calling in today, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Now that cannabis is legal in Canada, how will people access it, and what are the rules for buying or using it?
You know, this is pretty interesting because it really depends on where you live in Canada. So the federal government legalized weed a few months ago. I mean, it came into effect yesterday, but it's really up to provinces and territorial governments to control all of the, you know, the sort of trappings around legalization. So, you know, retail models, how it's going to be sold, how people can consume it, like where can they consume it and who can be consuming it, the minimum age and rules around things like possession as well. And what that means is that it's led to kind of a mishmash of different, almost sort of experiments in access and control all across the country. Because after all, this is new, right? Canada is only the second country in the world to do this, and we're doing it on quite a significant scale. It's a huge country, so we might see some convergence in policies over time. But for right now, there's lots of different sort of methods being used. So, for instance, if you're a person in New Brunswick right now. You can purchase your weed online or through a government-run store, and you're only allowed to consume your cannabis in a private residence. But if you live in Ontario, say, you can only purchase online right now because the government's been slower to kind of set up their model for retail. And in another province, for instance, Saskatchewan, you're buying from a private retailer. So where a government has licensed a private retailer to sell marijuana rather than the government running its own store. So it's really kind of a mixed bag across the country as of right now.
And I understand Maine's neighbors, Quebec and New Brunswick, have different age requirements, correct?
That's correct. So both of those provinces, for the time being at least, have mirrored the minimum age requirements for alcohol for cannabis consumption. So for Quebecers, that means 18 years of age, and for New Brunswickers, that means 19 years of age. However, there is a new government that was just elected in Quebec that would like to raise the age to 21 years.
What was the reason legalization succeeded in Canada?
Succeeded? I don't know. Do you mean the reason it passed?
Yeah, how did it pass? What was the campaign like?
It was interesting. I would say it passed because the government, our government is different in terms of how it functions, and the sort of the governing party that was elected by a majority, and part of their platform was to legalize marijuana, recreational marijuana. So once they were in power, it was much easier for them. But basically, their stated goal was, okay, we're going to legalize marijuana in order to be able to regulate it. They look at it from a health perspective. To be able to tackle organized crime. So by controlling retail and the way it was produced, that they could cut into the black market, and then also to be able to keep it out of the hands of children. So that's kind of how they pursued it and they framed it. And, of course, there was opposition from opposition parties, but also from interest groups or from third parties that were looking at health risks or other factors. But eventually they were successful because they had a majority and because they were able to move ahead with it.
And how will they measure whether they're how will the Canadian government, how will you as journalists, how will experts measure whether it's achieved this objective of cutting into the black market and combating organized crime?
Right. It's early days for sure. This is we're not even 48
day one.
Hours in. We're day two technically. But I think there are a few things that the success of legalized marijuana will be sort of measured on. Because basically, like, what remains to be seen is whether people are going to embrace this new model in Canada, right? So what the government is essentially asking people to do is to abandon their dealers, to abandon their the sort of illicit or dispensaries that they were using. And so basically, that's going to be dependent on, you know, are prices competitive, are the products what people are wanting, and I think it's important to keep in mind here. Weed wasn't invented yesterday in Canada, right? Like, there are, according to Statistics Canada, which is our sort of national statistics agency, in 2017, almost 5 million Canadians used weed, and they spent about $4 billion U.S. on it. And I mean, 5 million, just for context, Canada's only about 35 million people. So you already had 1 in 7 Canadians consuming cannabis. And in another Statistics Canada survey, people said in the lead up to legalization, just a couple months ago, about 82% of Canadians said, you know what, we're not going to change the way that we currently consume cannabis. So we're going to maintain our current habits. So the success of this, of the government's program to move away from black market dealing and to more to a regulated system and to get buy-in on that, will really depend on people kind of transitioning their current habits of how they use marijuana or how they're able to access it, transferring to the new model that came into effect yesterday.
So, Patrick, one more question before I let you go. What was the last 24 hours like? Was there a run on these new suppliers, these new dealers?
Oh, this is interesting, actually. Yes, we saw some big lineups. I'm from a place called St. John's, Newfoundland, which is right on the eastern tip of Canada. And so Newfoundland, because of time changes or time zones, my city was one of the first places to be able to actually access weed. And so there were huge lineups in St. John's. And across most of the country, we saw a big turnout for people to be able to go to these legal pot stores for the first time. And already this morning, there have been retailers in different parts of the country who have talked about having supply problems already. And there's been kind of some supply issues that have been identified in terms of just supply chain and getting the product that people want to retailers so that they can sell it to people. So, and maybe this is just kind of aches and pains as the system kind of figures itself out and producers realize what people want. Of course, this is very, very new, but already we're seeing that there are definitely some growing pains in how the legal retail system is reacting to legalization.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for joining us. So interesting. Patrick Butler covers news for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. He wrote a really big article about how this is going to work in Canada. We'll make sure and put that up on our Facebook page and website. Thank you, Patrick.
Cheers.
We're going to go on now. We'll start with Christine in Portland. Hi, Christine. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good morning. I've got a friend who's currently in the medicinal marijuana business and wants to expand to another location. But a challenge he's coming up against is with the new rules, knowing what is the setback going to be by the state for marijuana with regard to schools and churches. Because going into individual municipalities without knowing what the state's going to do, it's impossible to find a location at this point. So it's kind of stifling its growth.
Okay, Christine, thank you. Do any of you know the answer? Hillary, you know the answer to this?
Yep, so this has gotten a lot more complicated with the passage of the new medical marijuana laws that gave municipalities the authority to regulate medical marijuana businesses through zoning, through setbacks, through nuisance ordinances. And so the answer to the question, the setback by state law, it does have to have a setback of at least 500 feet or at least 1,000 feet. The town can lower it to 500 feet, but the town can also have it above 1,000 feet. The state law doesn't specifically address setback from churches, but the municipal ordinances, a number of them require, say, even 2,000-foot setback from churches, daycare facilities, that sort of thing.
So her friend really needs to wait and see what each municipality does.
Yep, and currently most municipalities in the state are in the process of developing these ordinances.
All right.
I think that's an important point, that local control really still exists here. So however your community wants to engage with adult use and medical use is really up to the community. So I'd say, you know, get really engaged with where you live and how you want your community to look and what you want to have happen. It is a 1,000-foot setback for schools and educational facilities, but there is some discretion around the ability for locals to interact with those people that are interested in getting into that industry.
Right, and actually one of the key facets of the adult use bill that we passed was really pretty darn strict local control. So it's legal now in Maine to, and you can get licensed for cultivation and retail sales and production of product. That's fine, but you can't put it anywhere unless the local town or city agrees to allow it there. So if my hometown of Augusta, for instance, could decide that they don't want any of this going on in Augusta, and they would be perfectly within the law in saying no commercial marijuana activity in Augusta, period. I'm not, don't think Augusta's necessarily going to do that. But keep in mind, as Hillary said at the beginning, this passed by the narrowest of margins, and largely on the vote from Southern Maine, I believe. So I think I'm correct in saying that the majority of House districts in Maine actually voted against it. So there are lots of people who say, you know, I don't care what they voted for in York and Cumberland County. We don't necessarily want it here. So those discussions are going on in virtually every town council and board of selectmen across the state.
We have a question from Heidi. What are the rights of people who don't want to breathe the secondhand smoke of marijuana, especially in public housing? What are the rights of people who don't smoke marijuana? I do support making hemp products because that does not involve smoking.
Well, the law that we passed actually has the smoking laws overlaid into it. So anywhere you can't smoke tobacco, you can't smoke marijuana. So there's a lot of control around that.
And landlords have the absolute ability to say no marijuana smoking in this apartment house and can certainly do that, and many of them have.
We'll go to Pete, who's calling from Cherryfield. Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just sitting here steaming because I'm part of the minority that voted against this. But I've been working with kids and adults with drug alcohol problems for years and years, and we know that marijuana is a gateway drug. And your person that brought up all about the setbacks of schools or whatever.
Yep.
Medical marijuana we are seeing is already getting into the middle schools from kids getting it at home, just like kids in the old days used to steal a beer or two from the refrigerator. Now we've got middle schoolers, and I know a number of cases that are passing it around the middle school because one of them gets it through medical marijuana from the household they live in. So I'm questioning whether just packaging warnings on marijuana products is going to keep our kids safe, and I don't think so.
Sure, Pete. Really, I think you bring up a point a lot of people would like to make. Go ahead, Teresa.
So I think one really important thing that we did with this bill is we took 12% of our revenue that will be coming in, and we started a public safety and health fund in there. And that will be focused primarily on some prevention things for kids. I think what we've learned that is when you share with kids how dangerous things can be, that they won't always make the perfect decision, but they make better decisions. And so I think we've learned that they don't see marijuana as dangerous, say, as tobacco, as alcohol, and we want to change that. So we're going to have a statewide campaign that'll help go into the schools, talk about the impact that marijuana can have on your body and your brain, and hopefully help to work toward prevention in use, and then help people who are over 21 who want to partake in this do it in a responsible way. In addition to that, all the packaging around this, everything that has a THC level in it will be labeled with a THC stamp, so to speak, so people will know with edibles if there's THC in that or not. And we did a lot of things around no cartoon characters, nothing that would appeal to children. Nothing's perfect. People do have to take some personal responsibility in their homes if they choose to have it in there. But I think we've made a really good first step toward it, and it's important to take that on.
Yep. Pete, let me jump in, too, and say I feel your pain. I didn't vote for this referendum myself because I thought that at the very least we should wait and see how other states handled it and how it played out in other states. But I think over the course of the last couple of years, I've come to realize that that we have marijuana in Maine. It isn't going away no matter what we do. And the choice was to leave it in the black market where it is, or to make sure that products are properly tested and labeled and packaged and dosed and all the rest of it. So at least if people are going to use it, then know they're getting a safe product that's been well dosed. And you know, as far as your talk of medical marijuana coming from home, we've heard a lot about that in other states, and it'll happen in Maine too. And as Teresa just said, at a certain point, we've just got to rely on the personal responsibility of parents to be good parents and not let it happen. And if we don't do that, then we can't. The state cannot completely regulate this and take a parental responsibility over.
Pete, I really appreciate your call. We are going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. Join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about dyslexia. We'll learn how it affects people and how it can be treated. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. Today, we're talking about marijuana regulation. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communications systems, norrisinc.com. And Evergreen Subaru in Auburn, announcing its new Share the Love hometown charity, Tree Street Youth in Lewiston. EvergreenSubaru.com.
On the next Speaking in Maine, we head to Portland to talk about China.
The Thucydides trap is a natural discombobulation that occurs whenever a rising power threatens to displace a ruling power.
Elliot Cutler is a lawyer who lived in China for 4 years. He joins the World Affairs Council of Maine to explain how the U.S. and China can coexist and avoid this trap. Join us on Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
The recent annual Maine Association of Broadcaster Awards ceremony brought much recognition to the work of Maine Public, 16 awards to be exact, news, radio, television, production, photojournalism. The daily work of Maine Public News staff, producers, and other staff reflect the commitment and quality we strive for each and every day in producing the service you count on. Thank you for making this public media service possible.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rose. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, an update on marijuana regulation. Joining us today, industry consultant Hillary Lister, State Representative Teresa Peirce, and State Senator Roger Cates. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to a tweet now. Do local municipalities have the ability to limit medical growing operations like what the town of Gray appears to be trying? Hillary.
Yes, they definitely do now. They cannot prohibit a patient from growing, and they cannot prohibit caregivers across the board, but they can regulate, and just to clarify, a caregiver is someone who's registered with the state to cultivate for a number of patients up to 30 mature plants. Previously, it was unclear in the law whether the towns could regulate caregivers. Now in the law, it is very clear, so they can say caregivers are only allowed in the light industrial zone. There has to be a clear setback. They have to comply with new fire codes around building design. If they're doing extracting, there's pretty strict new rules around that. So the towns really do have a lot of ability to control how growers can operate, if they're doing it on a commercial level, and where they can operate, and if they can at all.
All right, another tweet. Vaporizers have had a lot of popularity, and sometimes I see people vaping while driving. Is vaping considered probable cause by police to pull someone over? I think not, because one can vaporize both tobacco and marijuana products, so there's no way to tell the difference.
I suppose that's right. Smoking marijuana in public is not legal in the state of Maine. It's got to be done in your home or in certain circumstances at private functions, but certainly not on the road under any circumstances. The caller raises a more interesting question, too, about drugged driving and how we're going to deal with it. You know, we've developed some pretty darn good technology now on drunk driving, breathalyzers and breath tests and blood tests that pretty accurately measure impairment. We're not there on marijuana. And although a couple of states have gone to tests about how much THC is in the blood, there's really not a great correlation between those numbers and actual impairment. So as Teresa was saying, part of the money we've set aside here from the marijuana taxes is going to go right to law enforcement to help train additional drug recognition officers to get this kind of specialized training that, that they need to really be able to recognize the signs of marijuana impairment in driving so that we can do everything we can to make sure the highways stay safe.
We'll go to Sarah, who's calling from Union. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead. I think we lost Sarah. I'm going to go to David, who's calling from Casco. Hi, David. Go ahead. David, are you there?
Storefronts. Hello, can you hear me?
Now I can. Go ahead.
Hello. I was looking for a clarification regarding this thing pop around in town and a lot of places. Obviously, they're not adult use because there are none open, and I've been told they're not exactly medical dispensaries either.
Okay. Go ahead, Hillary.
I can address that, too. So there's a lot of medical cannabis shops opening up that are really kind of operating in a gray area of the law currently. The new medical law that goes in effect mid-December specifically would authorize caregivers to operate a storefront and serve an unlimited number of patients if the town had specifically permitted them or if the town has an ordinance specifically opting in to allow caregiver storefronts. The ones that are opening up right now, or a lot of them are attempting to sort of get themselves established before the law goes into effect, saying that the town has to have an ordinance. So you are seeing a big proliferation of them, and currently the regulations around them are kind of unclear. Once the department puts rules in place, probably middle of next year, I think you'll see more standards for storefronts similar to registered dispensaries that are in operation right now.
David, thanks for your call. We have an email from John. I ran the tobacco enforcement program in Maine for 15 years. I was involved in rulemaking and enforcing retail sales, sales to minors, and public smoking rules. I read the recent RFP for the marijuana rules and think it would have been better to separate the retail and medical sales rules from the testing and quality control. I would have helped with the retail medical sales end, but I do not think I have the testing expertise. I also think the governor's cost estimates for implementation were very high. I ran the tobacco program and never had a budget in excess of $1 million. So,
well, I think it's difficult to budget for it because, again, only a few other states have done it. How many people do we need to actually administer the system? And where it's really kind of educated guesswork, I think. Beyond that, the governor is not a big fan of the legalization of marijuana. He vetoed two bills that we passed the second time we overrode the veto. So I think it's fair to say, and I think the governor might be the first to admit, that he's not acting as quickly as he might otherwise do to get this up and running, and that rulemaking is part of it.
I'll go to Philip, who's calling from Mapleton. Hi, Philip. Go ahead. But before you ask your question, I have to ask if you had snow overnight.
No, we didn't.
Okay. I know some places did.
I know. It looks like it's coming.
Go ahead.
I was wondering about, I hear all this talk about medical marijuana. This is not medical marijuana we're talking about, is it?
Oh, we're talking about both today. And that's part of what's kind of confusing, isn't it, Hillary? There have been separate rulemaking hearings and things like that going on in the legislature simultaneously, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been confusing for, I think, a lot of people involved in the process because there's major changes to both a long-established medical marijuana law in the state plus implementation of new adult use rules, plus changes to the hemp laws, where in a lot of cases industrial hemp is effectively being used for medical purposes. The rulemaking that's coming up, it looks like they're hiring one consultant to do implementation of both the medical and adult use rules the way the RFP was written. So it looks like there's more push to streamline them. In the past, there has been more distinction, but as people are looking to get established in the adult use market, a lot of people are setting up medical businesses to get a foothold on that and then move transition into the adult use market.
And when you use the terminology adult use, you're using more sort of modern term to what people have been using, recreational.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's an important distinction. I think that we heard a lot from people that are concerned about kids and kids using this too early. You don't want to normalize it in a way. You know, it's a little like alcohol. It's something for people to do over 21. So I think all of us around the table are very careful with, we call it adult use. It's not a recreation sort of thing to do. It's an adult use thing to do. So
the other thing is, if we really were tying the age to better health, we would have made it age 25, because there's pretty clear evidence that the human brain is still developing up until the age of 25 or 26. Marijuana doesn't certainly help that. Politically, obviously, that wasn't going to happen, but we certainly don't want to be encouraging people under the age of 25 either.
Thanks, Philip, for your question. We'll move to Jim, who's calling from Winthrop. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hey. It's just in regards to the person asking about the vaping. I believe legally they cannot pull you over for that. I had my own experience where I did get pulled over because I was using a nicotine vaporizer. The primary thing when the two police officers came up to the car, or the truck, was, what did you have in your hand? And I showed vaporizer, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, they might be thinking I'm using a marijuana vaporizer. And so I showed them the nicotine bottle, and after that, everything was fine. I don't think legally they can, from what he said, but they can pull you over on suspicion of other things and check out what device you're using.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you for that follow-up call. Eden on Facebook writes, the huge benefit to Maine's economy will not be so much from sales tax, but from tourism. Let Maine be the Colorado of the East. Has that come up?
I think that's a great point. I think that we're a destination state, much like Colorado, and I think that's why it's important that we help people understand how to use it appropriately and within discretion, but also we want to encourage people to come here. I think we've worked hard as well to make sure that we have different levels of opportunity for small businesses to get involved in this. It is sort of can be somewhat of a craft market if people are interested in that aspect of it. We want to make sure that we can have organic, other things that might draw people to Maine. But at the end of the day, I think the majority will be sales within a state, probably.
We'll go to Matt, who's calling from Presque Isle. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have a quick comment, and then I'll let you go. For me, it seems very arbitrary at the very least, and certainly inconsistent with the numbers in regards to the number of plants that any person can grow, either medically or for their own personal recreational use. Somebody who has a successful outdoor grow operation with a small number of legal number of plants can quite easily grow pounds of marijuana off plants that are 6 or 7 feet tall. And then somebody who perhaps does not have that ability and lives in town in an apartment, who is only allowed to have that number of plants, might be at best lucky to get 6 ounces. So you're talking drastic differences in the amount of marijuana that is being allowed to be grown, and I just find that interesting, and I'm curious about where these numbers and these limitations are coming from.
Okay, good question. I'll ask our panelists. Go ahead.
Well, think about this as marijuana 1.0 here, because how long has it been since we did away with prohibition? 80 years, 90 mm-hmm. years? And every year in the legislature, we have 10 or 15 bills changing the way we regulate alcohol. And I'm sure there'll be 10 or 15 next session too. I am sure that there will be many bills next session trying to change and adjust and improve what we did on marijuana. And one of them may be just what the caller was talking about. I'm sure we didn't get everything right the first time. And there are differences between outdoor and indoor grows. And as we move along and understand those better, I'm sure the laws will change.
All right. Thanks, Matt, for your call. We'll go to Rockport and Judy. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Hi there. I don't think that marijuana possession for personal use should result in penalties and fines or jail terms. However, I find the whole marijuana phenomenon surreal. There's an enormous amount of money behind it. And in bad moments, I think to myself, why the push to have to encourage being stoned all the time? Is a stoned populace a more easily manageable populace? But the important question here for me is the low qualifications for caregivers and the what is unquestionable in my mind that they are, in fact, practicing medicine without a license, because there is no way that advice, instructions, side effects, that kind of thing, aren't discussed by caregivers. And I think that's the most appalling aspect of this.
Judy, thanks for your call. Teresa.
I think one of the most interesting things I found out while doing research on this and sitting on the committee was talking to a lot of doctors, actually, who were interested in understanding and clarifying what the real impact and ability to have this be an effective tool for people to use for therapy or pain and management. And what hinders that is the federal law that doesn't let research happen on marijuana. And they're talking about lifting that at the federal level. Right now, you can only do it in Mississippi, and you can only use 18 plants. And that doesn't give an effective and an ability to really test this and understand its capacity. So then we can address, I think, her concern of, is it real? Does it really work? Does it not work? It feels anecdotal. And so I hope that we move federally to lifting that. I think Maine would be a great state to do some research around it. It's a great industry to do that here. And it might be an effective way to look at that.
And my understanding is that a good part of Canada's income from their new law will be in medical research. But you wanted to jump in, Hillary.
And also the new medical law that passed does direct the department to put funds towards research in Maine itself on the medical uses. And in order for a person to be able to obtain it medically, they do have to have a doctor's recommendation. However, it has been a challenge as this has become seen as a more large-scale commercial enterprise, more people wanting to jump in who their focus isn't necessarily health or medicine. The quality varies widely, but I do think there are a number of caregivers who really do know their stuff, do care about this. But I think with these changing laws, that's going to put more standards in place, and I hope that some of the small-scale craft production, people who are focusing on herbal medicine in general, that perspective can continue to be part of this. And I think with more research on this, we can have it a lot more focused on getting the right sort of treatment to people who need it.
All right. Well, that's our last word today. Thank you all for being here on Maine Calling. Such an interesting conversation. The voice you just heard, Hillary Lister, industry consultant and patient advocate for medical marijuana. Also here with us, Representative Teresa Peirce and Senator Roger Cates have chaired Maine's Legislative Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, learning about dyslexia. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.